This episode of Risen Motherhood is funded by our generous donors. If you like this podcast, please consider joining them at risenmotherhood.com/give.
Motherhood is hard. One second, we think we're doing a good enough job, and the next, we feel like the worst mom on the planet, which is why we need the refreshing truth of the gospel to be repeated over and over, giving us hope in the everyday moments. So, Mama, whether you're sipping cold coffee or doing a sink full of dishes, we hope you'll find truth, encouragement, and laughter here. This is the Risen Motherhood Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Well, welcome back to another episode of Risen Motherhood. I'm Emily, here with my sister-in-law, Laura.
Hey, guys.
And today is our biannual Ask Us Anything show. So we do one of these in the fall and one in the spring where we just gather questions from our community and have a little bit of a longer show, which people ask for from time to time. So hope you're comfortable.
You buckle up, people.
Ready to listen to this in several sittings.
We're feeling very chatty today. You should have heard us before we started recording.
Exactly. So we want to, first off, we just want to let you guys know that tomorrow we are having a flash sale.
We are so excited. This is sort of the moment I feel like Emily and I have been waiting for, our team has been waiting for, and you guys have really let us know that you are waiting for this. You guys have been asking for us for t-shirts and mugs and, I don't know, other paraphernalia. And we are finally able to be in a spot where we can open a shop. It'll be a kind of quick flash sale type of thing. We only ordered a limited quantity, so we'll basically run the shop for a few days, likely, hopefully, Lord willing, until it sells out. But we have really cute tees. Em and I are wearing them, and they're adorable. Mm-hmm. We wear them pretty much every day.
Every day.
Every day. Definitely check them out. You can see the designs. There's all sorts. So no matter whether you like cursive, cute handwriting, or straight lines and the classic RM logo, we kind of have every type of style for you, hopefully to meet whatever you prefer. And then we are working on mugs. So when we're recording this like a month in advance. We are working on the mugs. We're not sure if we'll have the mugs. By the time this comes out, we'll know. And so you'll know and you'll be able to preview the shop. But just wanted to let you guys know that, yeah, we have this awesome shop and we hope you guys will go visit.
Okay, so now we are going to dive right in. So I already gave a little bit of background on this, but whenever Laura and I are curating these questions, we go through and we try to look for what were some of the most commonly or frequently asked things. We try to think about things that we don't have a show on. So we'll link everything in the show notes for you because your question may be on our site, on a post that we did with either some type of answer or some resources that we've provided for that. So if you don't hear your question today, look there.
Yeah, we've answered a lot. We've had like four Ask Us Anything shows, three, four, I don't know. So we've answered a lot of these questions. And then as Em said, there are a lot of shows that really go in depth. You probably don't even want your big hard question answered here today because we won't go into depth. But there are, like I said, you can head to the show notes and we'll link as much as we possibly physically can for the hundreds of questions that come in. We do try to figure out, hey, if we've answered it, how can we point you to the right resource? So head to those show notes.
All right, so let's dive right in. This is a lighthearted one to start. Minivan or SUV, Laura?
Oh,
what
man.
Kind of car do you use for your family?
So I don't want to talk about my car. I want to talk about Emily's car.
Oh, my car.
I want to talk about Emily's, not car. I don't think, that thing's a tank.
My giant van. Yeah, we actually, in the last year, purchased a giant 9-passenger conversion van.
It is so hilarious because my kids will see like delivery trucks and be like, it's Aunt Emmy. It's Aunt Emmy.
Yes, it's been really awesome. It's actually been a pleasant surprise. Yeah. But the story is really cool. Laura wanted me to share on here because it was a big answer to prayer. And this story is going to include some details that I don't typically like share on the show. So just kind of take them in stride with the rest of the story. Okay. So after our fifth child was born, around that time, all of our kids and their car seats were kind of growing out of the current van that we had. And so it was an option to get one of those minivans with the middle seat.
This is what I drive. Honda Odyssey, basically. Yes. Yep.
There you go. Because you can just pack those car
like
seats.
The classic
in.
Mom car. Every parking lot I roll into, it's like, which one is my van? There are 55 of the same one. So there's my answer for you to this one.
Yes. So that could have been, that was one of our options and that would have worked. But at that time we thought, if you've heard the gospel and family size, family planning show, you know that we wanted to have a larger than average family, potentially have more children. So we were like, we're just going to go for it. We are going to get
committed. You guys,
we're going to get the big, big van. and we did. But as time kind of went on, our son with developmental delays, just they became more significant. And we started to realize that this was going to be a really long-term journey for our family. And yeah, it was just a lot more difficult. It kind of started to change our plans for our family size. And we got to this point where we felt like, I think for now, you know, unless God changes our hearts, like we may be done having children. And so at that point, I was driving around this massive van around town feeling like, man, Lord, why did we get this big van? Mm-hmm. Because you've really changed our plans for our family. We could have done something different. And I brought that up to my husband. And literally that same week, we took my son into a doctor who told us he is going to need a pediatric wheelchair. He's not going to be walking independently for a long time. And even if he can walk a little bit, you are going to need a transport wheelchair for a very long time. So that was obviously very hard news, although we'd already had a seed of that planted. But that day, I walked out of the appointment and I flung open the doors to the side of my giant van. And you guys know what was right there? A big spot that was the perfect size for a pediatric wheelchair. Like, I just lost it in that
parking lot. I'm totally losing it right now.
And just felt like, in that moment, you know those times when God just gives you special comfort and just reminds you, like, I already know what you need before you know that you need it. I am a billion steps ahead of you. I care about you. I'm going to be with you through this process. I think just so many of God's promises came flooding back. And so now we drive around a big van with 5 kids and a perfect spot for a wheelchair in it. And it's just been a tremendous blessing for our family. So that's my van story.
That's why I wanted her to answer, because I wanted you guys to all hear that and just be encouraged. I am definitely an emotional person, but that is like a legit tearjerker, amazing story of God's providence and provision for Emily's family. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So the next question we have is, what is it like living with your parents, Laura? Any tips on clashing with parents?
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Laura moved to Iowa at the beginning of last mm-hmm. year. And so she's been living with her parents, my in-laws,
yes,
for how many months now?
It's 9 months right now at the time of the recording. It's been a long time.
Yeah, so, but it's been fun to watch the process, because whenever I ask either Laura or my in-laws about it, everyone just says it's been a really great experience. Yeah. Yeah. And we're all getting along and it's been great. So definitely share. share your tips.
Yeah, yeah. So you guys have heard me talk about my parents. I do really think the world of them. And I think, honestly, living with them has been great. And I don't say that just to honor them as they listen or anything, but because it's true. I think I'm ready to be in my own place for sure. We should be in a few months. So I don't want to act like, oh yeah, I'm just going to camp out forever with them. But one beautiful thing is we do have our own space. My parents live in a really gigantic old schoolhouse. So there is a lot of space. But, and as far as like kind of logistical things that have worked well for us, we definitely had a talk before we moved in and talked through, hey, how do our finances going to work? How are just like the living situation going to work? Whose roles are what? And generally, without spilling all the details, I think the biggest thing that you have to figure out is food, right? And so we talked through, I'm going to be making all the food. My husband are making sure that the pantry and the fridge are always full, and kind of work through that. And that really helped, mm-hmm. I think, because meals are just, they're the biggest part of a kind of the community in a home. Yeah. And everyone has to eat. So we also talked through common grandparent thing, like, hey, iPad usage or gum, or what happens when they, you know, ask you to do something, what's the authority chain? And so that was really helpful to lay some ground rules. And generally, like I always say, like I try to live like my parents don't live here, meaning I don't expect them to babysit. It's not an assumption for me. I pick up the toys. I don't expect them to do that. I cook the food. If we need food, I make the food. I answer my kids' questions, even if they're directed to, you know, my mom or someone else. I try to like intervene and like protect my parents. And I assume that I want to live in a way that doesn't expect them to help me. But at the same time, I also live like my parents do live there. So I remind my kids, hey, inside voices, no jumping on the couch, or other rules that my parents appreciate that maybe I wouldn't necessarily mind in my own home, but because I want to honor them, we've definitely shuffled some things around and I make sure that I'm enforcing those and I don't expect my own parents to enforce those things. So I grew up with my parents. I know how they live, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that is an advantage because if I were living with maybe my mother-in-law, who is another wonderful woman, I could see more tension mm-hmm. like with a daughter and a mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, with the mom and the mother-in-law. It's not making any sense. You know,
I know what you mean.
Yeah. So I could see that being more difficult. Yeah. So I also think that that's advantageous for us. But, you know, we chat about things. If something's bothersome, like we bring it up, not in the heat of the moment, but we do address it. So there aren't things that are just festering. That's really, really important. And my family is just a big communicative family and we always believe the best in one another. And that has really, really helped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been a joy to watch you guys do that. And I know we had my parents live with us for the first 6 months after my twins were born. They moved to Iowa and we lived in a very small space mm-hmm. together with actually my brother as well. And it was a trying time, not because of living with each other was hard personality-wise, but just because it was a lot of people together and a lot to manage. But when I look back on that season, I am so thankful. And I think, wow, I really needed their help during yeah. that time. And it was just a joy and something that I think overall was a great privilege for both of us to be able to help each other out in that way and then come out of that season with a really strong relationship on the other end. So good tips.
Yeah. Good advice. So, Emmy, do you use essential oils? This was a big time asked question.
Yes, it was. No, I do not. I did buy a starter kit years ago. I feel like when it was first kind of becoming popular. So I don't know if I just didn't do it right. I will take the responsibility for not being able to figure it out, but it just wasn't that effective for our family. And I also feel like my husband wasn't on board. Like he kind of teased me about it. So totally fine. I haven't really looked back after that. I do still use like lavender sometimes in my baths.
Smells amazing.
With Epsom salts.
Well, bath bomb. Those are awesome.
So I still use it for that sometimes when I'm trying to go to bed, but I am so happy for those of you. Seriously, if you use essential oils and they work wonderful for you and you love them, 2 thumbs up.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say I'm definitely similar to Emily. I have a lot of friends who love them, swear by them, think they're amazing. And that is awesome, but it just hasn't, for me, it's just not something that we've ever really gotten into. I don't even know if I've ever spent any money on them. I think people have
I've probably given you some samples.
Yeah, you probably have. We probably had some samples, but they seem really neat and they do smell amazing.
All right. The next question is, what do you think about forcing your child to hug grandma and grandpa?
And we could even just expand this to like anybody who asks for a hug.
Totally.
So this happens all the time. I feel like I have stories of random people coming up and trying to like hug my kids or, you know, like people dote on them and use physical touch. And I think that there's definitely a lot going around that the experts would say, hey, you don't really want to encourage any unwanted physical contact. And so we always want to show caution, I think, and step in. I think that's something that I've learned is like to just be brave and be willing to step in and be like, hey, you know, redirect the person or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing we do with our kids is that when we walk in, and whether it's a grandparent they know well or a great grandma or somebody else, we'll say, hey, do you want to give a hug, a handshake, or a high five? And just saying in a fun and friendly voice gives kids the option. And if they want to just high five, then that's totally fine. And if they want to run in for a big hug, they can do that too. And I think that that's been a helpful way to avoid unwanted touch. Obviously, it doesn't protect from zero touch at all, but especially if it's someone you know and trust, but your child's just not really into it, it's a pretty great little saying.
Yeah, I feel like that's an element of using discernment and wisdom as a parent. I think you can kind of look at your child and say like, they're really genuinely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They are afraid. I don't want to force them to hug someone or touch someone if they don't want to completely. But there's other times when you can tell your child is just being a stinker. It's, you know, a very safe great grandma that they could give a high five to.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's that type of situation. It just takes mom and dad's awareness and knowing what to do there.
Yeah. And you can prep your kids before you go in, especially like Emily says, like a great grandmother in a nursing home that, you know, just your child's maybe more nervous because the environment is different, mm-hmm. but I think you could certainly prep them and say, just to be polite, you know, sure. you have the option to do these things and talk it through with them. I mm-hmm. think that's always really helpful.
I like that as an opportunity to talk about why we might greet someone that way.
Yeah. What's respectful.
Yeah. And for them to explain why maybe they don't want to greet someone that way.
Totes.
Great conversations.
Okay. Next question. How have your husbands been a part of Risen Motherhood?
Very behind the scenes.
Yeah. They're not on the podcast. They're not writing articles.
Yeah. Both Laura and I have, you know, husbands that work jobs completely normal, different.
Normal day.
Completely different hours. Than even ministry related jobs. So my husband is in property ownership, development, and management. So although he loves God and the gospel, his bent is not towards this type of ministry. But I feel like he's really partnered with us by just, I think, laying down so much of his time and energy to just really help me and by being a co-laborer at home, like literally cleaning, you know, cooking meals, grocery shopping, waking up with the kids, just being with them sometimes while I have to prep or travel. And like, I just really appreciate whenever we were even looking into the book, he was the first person to be like, Emily, yes, you have to do this. Like, you absolutely should do it. What can we do to make it happen? And he is definitely big on like boundaries, and he is not impressed by me.
No, either of our husbands
are. Hopefully
you
take that in the right way. Like, yes, on one level he is, but another level he sees me. And so he's able to help me evaluate things. But overall, I would just say he's been sacrificial, and that has allowed me to do this.
Yeah. My husband is probably very similar. He's really good to ask me how it's going and to celebrate just mm-hmm. the good things that God has done through it and praying for it. He also just, my husband tends to just, I'm the dreamer and he's much more steady and stable. And mm-hmm. I call him the civvy to my dreams. He definitely filters them. But especially when it comes to Risen Motherhood, he has been just so incredibly supportive. And I think I should have asked him, but I know this, that he's really, really proud of the work that we do here. And he is just, I don't know. I think he just loves the work that we do, and he's just proud that we're able to participate in this. And just, he sees all of the behind the scenes work. He knows how many hours go into this. He knows the frustrations and the sadness and the wonderful good things that happen too. And so he's just been my rock through all of it. And I know I couldn't do it without him. And he also, as Emily was saying, like not being impressed. He always just jokes with me, like, you're never going to get a big head. Don't worry about it. You live with me. I won't ever let you, you know? So that's been really good. Like, I am very appreciative yeah. that we have husbands that just know how normal we are. And I always say to other people who I meet in real life or whatever with Risen Motherhood, like, I feel like anyone could do this. God could have picked mm-hmm. anyone. Like, we're just trying to be faithful in the little bit that we know, but like, there isn't anything special about mm-hmm. Emily and I. Like, truly, we want you to know we are like co-laborers with you guys in this, and that we're not better moms than you. We're not smarter moms. We're not mm-hmm. wiser. We're just two regular people that are thinking and trying and attempting to apply the gospel yeah. to our daily lives. And thankfully our husbands see that, and they're also very encouraging of it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you kind of touched on this next one, Laura, but we had this a lot. Do you wrestle with the influence you have, and how has the Lord guided you in this? Whew. I would say yes.
Of course. Yeah.
Majorly struggled. Laura and I did not get in this to have a platform or to like be influencers. We got in this to share the gospel and to learn and grow, to just be faithful to the next thing that God was leading mm-hmm. us to do. And I feel like the influence or the platform or whatever has kind of been a surprise, or it just wasn't something that we were striving after. But for me, I think it can just feel like it's a thing that always has me on my knees. And it's something that God has used to show me areas where I have shame or idolatry that I need to deal with and place my worship and my identity more fully in Him, so that I can trust in His gospel and in His word to go out and do the work, and for me to just continue serving in whatever capacity that is. And oh, it's really hard though.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I definitely struggle with just the normalness of who I am, and that I feel like I'm not very good at this. I'm not like cut out for it. I say too much, if you could hear me in real life. So I tend to be very free with my words and probably like a more open and overshare naturally. And I worry about saying something untrue, but then when I have to think about my words and I think about them too hard, I kind of get tongue-tied and I feel like I can't find this balance. And I'm continually praying for God to like allow me to articulate the gospel really clearly and concisely for you guys. But to also do it like in a personal and relatable way. And that balance has been really hard for me. And I think the more that I have come to know God and know about him, I realize there's so much more for me to learn and there's so much room for error. And that's terrifying. It's paralyzing really, because we don't want to mislead anyone. We don't want to speak untruths, but it's just like that reality that we're human. And unless we're God, we won't deliver the message perfectly. You know, we're just kind of conduits. We're vessels that he's using, and we're thankful that he is faithful and we can trust that. But we also know that we are very fallible. It's just such a precious message that we really want to be able to handle it with care. And I often don't feel that I am able to treat it as delicately as I should. But we have a really neat team around us. We have people praying for us. We have our husbands, as we mentioned, lots of people supporting us who are willing to call us out, who have called us out, who have helped us. And yeah, I think another like little twist on that too would just be figuring out what to do next year, the year after. It's kind of like we're in the season of raising young children, and like, hey, there's these opportunities around us. There's so many opportunities to say yes. And there's so many ways we could go. There's so many new projects we could take on. There's so many ways to like continue to grow in notoriety. And she and I have talked a lot about just the value of a quiet life and the value of just simplicity, and just how like someone who is very faithfully working at home with no blog, no podcast, no, you know, online presence, like is doing more for the kingdom, or could be doing more for the kingdom than what we're doing, you know? And it may be a surprise someday how things pan out, I think. And so I think we wrestle with how much time to put into things, how much to say yes to things. And often we'll say, you know, just because we're saying no doesn't mean we're saying no enough. And that, you know, figuring out how often to say no has been hard too. And just to wrestle with, hey, is the opportunity now? Is it going to pass and I'll never get it again? And I don't think that's true. We don't think that's true.
Absolutely. And I think just for somebody out there who's like really wants to grow, or like thinks, oh, I'm going to be satisfied once more people like me or my Instagram account grows or my following is more impressive, and saying, okay, I'm going to start to do some of the popular things online in order to get there. Just know, like, no matter how many followers you have, from people who, to people who've seen their follower count grow, you will always want another follower. It will not ever be enough unless you are fully satisfied in Christ and in what you have in him, in the quiet life that you have. And also, I would just say, like, influence and notoriety or fame or platform or whatever word you want to use is also, there is a sourness to it. And there is a, just don't believe that that is worth chasing after. If God like gives that to you in the midst of sharing the gospel faithfully, and that's just part of what he does to grow it, then that is what God does. But it's definitely not something that I would say chase after or get excited about, because it comes with a lot of responsibilities and things that are more difficult as well, that Laura and I have had to grapple with. And so we're very grateful. I don't want to sound like we're not grateful. We are very grateful to be able to share the gospel with so many people. But also, I'm thankful that God has both Laura and I in a place where I am literally wiping bottom, you know, a million times a day. Like, kids are barfing on me.
Keeping us humble.
Yeah, I'm helping my child who can't talk. You know, there is real struggles in our lives. And those things, I think, help keep our eyes on Christ alone. So,
Oof, that was kind of a heavier one. We could go on probably forever, but we'll go to the next question. Okay. We get a lot of marriage questions with Ask Us Anything, all variations, but most of them culminate to this very important question. How do you do date night in your marriage? So how do you strengthen your marriage in the busy season of littles? Do you go out? Do you do at-home date nights? What does it look like? All right, Emma, I'm going to let... Emmy's a little bit passionate about this topic right now. So
I don't know why I'm on this. Maybe because I'm in a season where just...
Oh, I think I'm like full bore, like in support of this. So just buckle up later.
I'm just like in a season we both are where if date night is like the indicator of how our marriage is doing, like...
We all failing.
We're in trouble. But so I think we want to talk about this. Big caveat up front, date night is fine, and we're going to come back around
and
to
we
that.
Have addressed it. Yes. We have talked about it on a couple AUA shows. We will link it for you so you can hear. I don't think the answer has really changed from like a year ago or something, but we're taking a different angle, probably a more mature risen motherhood angle this time.
We're so mature. Not really. Okay. So I think Christian culture, it feels like whenever marriage comes up, like the very next sentence is something about date night.
Yeah.
And so it's something that we Christian couples are like, oh, how do we get this on the calendar more? But I think one thing that's been helpful for us in this season is to remember, like, what is our marriage actually founded on? Because God's word is true for all people for all of time. And not all people for all of time have been in cultures or in situations where, you know, there's this idea that like you go out to dinner at the restaurant or you have these even really like romantic outings with each other or that you travel or that you're at home together. And that's, again, not to say it's not important, but we have to remember like God's word equips us to have a healthy marriage that doesn't necessarily include our modern Western idea of having time together as a couple.
Yeah, I think that we all think that our marriage will be enhanced or better, or our communications problems will be solved if we get out on a date night. You know, if we just have that alone time with our husband, then our marriage will be better, or we'll feel loved, or there will be romance, or all of those things. And ultimately, like, date night isn't the end in and of itself. And we can tell you to do at-home date nights. We can tell you to get out. We can tell you to take a yearly vacation. I mean, all of those practical tips are really true and they're really helpful. But we also just want to encourage you to not have an expectation that a date night is going to transform your heart or your husband's heart or change the marriage. Only God does that work, and he can do it in the little years with no date nights and months on end of your husband traveling. Maybe he's in the military, maybe he travels for work, and there is literally not even an opportunity for a date night. But God can strengthen and transform that marriage. And so if you want a changed marriage more than planning a date night and saving for a babysitter or whatever that may be, start with praying for your marriage, with reading God's word, with serving and loving your husband right where you guys are at in the daily grind. And I mean, that is ultimately what is going to change your marriage, is not just like a night out where you get to wear wedges.
Mm-hmm. Which is super fun.
I like never wear wedges, even on date night. Flats is where it's at for me. I don't know why I said that.
Yes. Well, I think it's just good to remember, like, what is this marriage founded on? Like, even in the little years, even when we're exhausted, even when we don't feel this big spark of romance, it's founded on covenant, this solemn promise that we made before God and before others that, you know, we've promised to uphold. And so it's just a reminder, it's not built on our romance, you know, it's built on this promise. And additionally, like that the purpose of our marriage is to be this picture of Christ and his church so that the world can see God's glory. And so, yet we do this as we have passionate, you know, outward affection for our husband for sure. And as we make time for one another, but we also, I think, show the world this beautiful picture when we're loving each other well in the everyday, when it is hard and it takes perseverance and it takes working together and laying down our lives. And that can be a way, just the mundane everyday faithfulness, I think, can also be a way that we fulfill that purpose. And so hopefully we can, maybe we'll do a show on this in the spring and get into this a little bit more. I don't know. We'll put it on our list, but we just want to encourage you for the mom who is very stressed out about the date night.
Yeah.
It is a wonderful, joyful thing, but look for like, how can you strengthen your marriage today? Like in the the everyday grind. If date night isn't on the horizon for a while, what does it look like to have time for, you know, sexual intimacy with your husband? We actually answer that on another AUA show. Mm-hmm. To serve him and just show him that you enjoy him and that you're co-laboring with him for the sake of the gospel right where you're at today, and just praying that God would give you that strong marriage.
Yeah, so sorry if that was a wah-wah answer, but really, really, hopefully you're more encouraged than just hearing about our tips and tricks. But if you still want those, we totally get it. Head on over to the AUA show. That will be linked in our show notes. We're going to say that a lot this show, I think.
All right, next, how do you introduce or encourage a toddler to pray?
Yes, this is a good question. Generally, we would just say model it in front of them, you know, be doing it at the kind of standard traditional times, meal times before bed, when they're struggling to obey, when you're struggling to obey God, when mommy messed up, you know, just show them what a life of regular prayer looks like. Feel like you can use real simple language with them, you know, dear God, thanks for this food. Amen. Whatever words mm-hmm. they have, if they've got 10 words, you know, thank you, God. I mean, that is prayer. And then I think just to reminding them that they can talk to God at any time. That's something that, especially with my 5 and 3-year-old, we talk about a lot. It's just like talking to me. You know, they can tell God if they're scared or if they're worried and ask him for strength and protection. They can tell God if they're happy or excited about a new birthday present or something upcoming. And they can also tell God if, you know, they want to see something happen, like mm-hmm. they don't want to be sick anymore. Or, you know, so we talk through a lot of those things that, like, talking to God is like talking to mama. So mm-hmm. you can do that anytime, even if mama's not there.
That's exactly what I would say.
Oh, okay. No more tips.
Yeah. No.
Let me think.
I think if you're modeling it and doing it in front of them, it's a normal part of their lives. And then it's very easy to just say,
it's
repeat
not scary.
After me.
Yeah.
I think all of our kids that can talk can pray independently now. And it's not because
we did anything intentionally.
Right. They just watched what we did. Yeah. And then over time, from probably the time they could talk, we've been asking them to, hey, why don't you pray for us for dinner tonight?
Yep. Yeah. No, for real. Like, I mean, we were in the car yesterday and there was like a storm, and right away my son was just like, let's pray for God to protect us on the way home. Mm-hmm. And it's just because we've done that before. One time mm-hmm. there was literally a tornado not very far away. Ooh. Yeah, we're driving home and we prayed that time. So I think he picked up on the one time we did it. Okay. And I liked this question. I have a hard time explaining image bearers to my young kids. How do you do it?
Mm-mm-mm. Okay. So there's a lot of ways to do this.
Yeah.
And as with any, I think, big theological concept that we're presenting with our kids, a lot of it is one little idea and then building upon that over the course of a long period of time. This isn't probably a, let me present to you the concept.
Hey, 3-year-old.
Although I would love to try to do that.
Emily probably has.
Yeah, I did try that. Didn't work. I think it's good to just keep that long view in mind. So as we're just kind of giving some of these answers, remember this is
built over years.
Yes. I'm still trying to figure out seriously. What image bearing means. But one way to start the conversation, I think, is just pointing out the way a child looks like their parents. Even if you have, you know, an adopted child or foster care child, just even explaining, like, look, we both have hair and eyes and hands, and God made us both people. But for your biological children, even saying things like, our hair is the same color. Look, we both have freckles. We both have brown eyes. You know, reminding them of a time. Has anyone ever stopped you and told you, you look like daddy? You look just like your mommy? And just making that connection that parents have similarities to their children. And oftentimes, children kind of look like a miniature example of their parents. So we can just explain that God, our Father in heaven, created humans to image him too, right? We're not exactly like him. Our kids are not exactly like us, but we're similar. And so when people see us, they're supposed to see this little picture of what God is like. Just like when our kids are out in the world, I even think of this in terms of like character qualities of, hey, when you're out at the park or you're at school and you're behaving a certain way, people think you're representing our family and what we're like and what we value and how we talk at home. So you're kind of a little picture for people, a little representation of what the Jensens are mm-hmm. like. Now, obviously, these analogies break down, but I think they're like helpful initial connections to give kids when you're starting this conversation. And another thing we did recently when we had a kiddo that was lying to us is talking about the difference between God and Satan, or like you could use the serpent in the gardens. Like, what did God do? Like, he was a creator. He was kind. He provided things. He made life. You know, he loved beauty and relationships. He told Adam and Eve the truth. He helped them do what he asked them to do. Well, what was the serpent like? And my kids know the gospel story. This is where this constant stream of discipleship.
She's building on the foundation.
Yes.
She's already laid. Yeah.
They already know the story. Oh goodness. Like the serpent, he
was
lied.
A liar.
He's sneaky.
he's a trickster. That's what my kids call
snake.
Him.
You know, he was encouraging them to do bad things. Like he wanted people to die. He wanted to destroy people. He was making beautiful things really ugly. And then we can talk about like God made you to be like him. He wants you to, you know, love the things that he loves. And he doesn't want us to be like that sneaky snake who is destroying things and making beautiful things ugly and lying and manipulating people. And obviously we can use kid language in that. And I think that is another perfect way to say like, oh, but you're not imaging God all the time, are you? You don't look just like God. What are you going to do about that problem?
That's why we need Jesus. Perfect way to share the gospel.
Yep, there you go. So I just think those are just some examples of conversations we've had. It comes out a lot in like, I say discipline conversations is when it comes up a lot for us.
Yeah, and I would just say too, like, don't overcomplicate it either. Kids learn the meaning of words all the time without you giving an explanation. They are just sponges, like picking up everything that you're saying. And so if you're using that word in regular conversation in the context of God's word and with Jesus and with all of those things, like, while yes, they may at some point ask for explanations, or there may be really appropriate times for you to just naturally segue into one, I would also just say, like, you know, if you just talk to yourself, like I'll talk to my son and say, you know, remember you're an image bearer of Jesus. And so go out and show people what Jesus looks like. And that's as complicated as it gets. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand the full weight of being an image bearer. And he probably doesn't, but he knows that like, okay, I want to act like Jesus at school. And it's just a quick friendly reminder. And I think over time, those truths are built in our heart. And as we've both been saying, like, just recognizing that these big, big concepts are things that, yes, even a young child can understand, but the depth and weight and breadth of them are learned over years and years of Christian life and study and maturity. And so just allow your kids to be kids too.
Yep. So, and I think that transitioned to another question.
Oh, yeah.
Of like,
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Somebody talking about starting catechisms with their 18-month-old and just saying that they found themselves getting discouraged. So they're just asking, like, am I having too high of expectations when my toddler can only say 9 words? And so building upon this answer is, yeah. So I understand this question because I thought this when my oldest was young. And it is wonderful. And I do not regret an ounce of energy that I spent trying to teach him vocabulary words and help him memorize the gospel. Those were all good things. Mm-hmm. But just now that I'm a little bit further ahead, not much further ahead, I realized that his language, like his output, was not meeting my expectations. So again, I would never discourage a mom from like starting with those things, but that's fine. Have high expectations for your input. But as far as their output goes, like if they can only say 9 words, they're not going to be able to repeat a catechism back to you. And that is okay.
Yeah. Think of it as practice for yourself. Like I remember those first few years of just my son at home, or even just my son and daughter when they were too young to really speak very much. And it was really, really good practice for me to say, oh, I love these books. And I kind of get out all the jitters. Like you need years, speaking of how long this takes, years of like learning the gospel language, learning how to turn it into something that a 2-year-old can understand, you know, learning how to gather the supplies that you would say, oh, this is how we like to do family quiet times in our home. They don't have to look like Sally Smith's over there. They can look like this in our home. And so these years, they matter, but don't expect the output, as Emily keeps saying, to like feel gratifying. It probably not gonna.
Yeah. And in those little years, we have some shows about this. Like, another thing we're doing in addition to giving that knowledge is being a representative to them of what God is like, you know, and his love and the fact that we're trustworthy and we're caring for them and we're nurturing them. So I would definitely keep a lot of focus on that too. All right. Next question. How do you approach Santa? and other non-Advent type Christmas traditions.
So this is a question, funnily enough, we actually get year around. People are thinking about Santa in June, which is hilarious to me. But I it's a good question. It's one that we have gotten asked a lot. And so Emily and I actually, without talking with one another or without really, you know, saying, what are you going to do? I'm going to do what you do. We haven't done any of that, but we have taken sort of the same position on Santa. And this is something that we want to say, first off, do your own research. Talk with your husband, make your own decision for your family. We are speaking here about what our personal families have decided. There are a ton of opinions about Santa, which is why we have not tackled it head on in like a show or something, because we feel like Christians all over the board have really taken a lot of different stances on Santa. And I feel like maybe we're in the middle. I don't even know. But for us, Christmas is about Christ. So during Advent, during Christmas, our family, we don't really incorporate a lot of Santa. It's not that Santa is off limits. It's not that Santa is a dirty word. It's not that we can't
don't
watch
say
things.
Santa in the house.
it is simply like, hey, he's just another, I want to say fairy man. That's not true. What are those things? Fairy tale?
Yeah.
He's just another character in storybooks. Mm-hmm. And we are not anti-Santa. We're not necessarily pro-Santa. It's just like our kids are raised knowing that, hey, Santa's a really fun make-believe thing. And he's a lot like the cow at Chick-fil-A. Yeah,
it's like Winnie the Pooh.
Yes, exactly.
Totally. That's how we approach it as well. And we've even talked about like, hey, Santa originated as like a real person. There's actually some really neat stories that you can then tie back into the gospel. But as much as possible, we take Christmas as an opportunity to focus on Christ. And then when Santa stays in like the fantasy category, like the Mickey Mouse category, for us, he's not a threat. So he can show up in a movie, he can show up in a storybook, he can show up at the mall. And like, we honestly don't even take our kids to see Santa at the mall. But if we did, I'd be like, cool.
Yeah, we have a picture with our kids with Santa because he was free and we were at like this Christmas thing. I'm like, cool. And my kid's crying really hard. So
yeah, we're like, hey, look, somebody dressed up like Santa.
Yes, yes.
Like the Santa
It's like
character.
A mascot.
Yes, like a mascot. That's a great.
The cow at Chick-fil-A. That's where I was headed with that.
And so that's how we treat it. And so the next question that we always get whenever we say this is, so what do you do about your child spoiling Santa for other people? I will just say, like, for us, we have never had that happen. But before we've gone somewhere, if I know that we're going to be in that situation, I've just told our kids, hey, please don't make a big deal about Santa or don't talk about Santa. Or, you know, we just have a conversation beforehand. And this is, you know, maybe wrong, but like, I just assume if that ever happened, like I would take my husband and I would talk to that parent and like take responsibility for it. Yeah. You know, it's like, I cannot control their language, completely, but that has for us been more of like a hypothetical fear and not something that we've really seen boots on the ground. In fact, the biggest issue we've had is adults questioning our kids when an adult says, well, what is Santa bringing you for Christmas? And they're like, huh? Grandma and grandpa get me presents. And the adult is actually the one who's offended, even more so than we've ever really had an issue with a kid.
So my mom had Santa spoiled to her when she was a little bit like older in school, which is why my family did not do Santa growing up, because she did not want that devastation for her own children.
Oh, no.
So just to give just like another perspective, which was really interesting, but I was raised without Santa. Emily, were you raised with or without Santa?
We did Santa when I was young.
So I wasn't because of what I just mentioned, but I always appreciate, and this is what my mom did and kind of how we have handled it with our kids that are verbal. Basically, we talk about how, you know, Santa is make-believe, but some parents handle it differently, but it's the mommy's and daddy's decision to tell their child when they want to, that Santa is just pretend, that Santa's actually mommy or actually daddy. And so we talk about, you know, hey, when you talk with a friend, like, just remember that that's their mommy and daddy's job. So that's not your job. And you wouldn't want someone to spoil something for you. And so that, I mean, like Emma said, I've never had an issue. My son has been around a lot of kids that do believe in Santa and families that do practice Santa that are dear friends of ours. And he's I don't even know what he does. We've never had it come back to us. And I've even asked him around the holiday season, like, hey, have any of your friends talked about Santa? And he'll say, yeah. And I'll ask kind of how the conversations go. And he's like, I just didn't say anything, you know? And so yeah. I think kids are fairly immature. Like if they get the concept of Santa, like at a deeper level a little bit, mm-hmm. then I think they can also understand that like, that's not something that I need to yeah. share.
Totally. And I think that brings up a good point of like, my parents did Santa with me. And overall though, Christmas was about Christ. So Santa yeah. was just, even though I believed in Santa and Christmas presents showed up from Santa, when I look back over the course of my whole childhood, that's not like what stuck in my mind yeah. of like, this is the meaning of Christmas. It didn't
ruin like what truth is for you.
Yes,
there absolutely. Are a lot of things out there, I think. And again, we see merit in different arguments. So you're not yes. going to get Emily and I's position on like who's right, because we maybe do have opinions a little bit yeah. further than this. But generally, mm-hmm. what we want to advise you on is like, let's just all not make it such a big deal mm-hmm. and talk with your husband and handle it. Okay, next one. Oh, and also, this is how we handle the Tooth Fairy, the Easter Bunny.
Yep.
So any follow-up questions, just so you know, all those fairy...
They all
fit. How do I call them fairy people? What are they?
They are...
Make-believe...
Characters.
Characters.
Make-believe characters.
Holiday characters.
Holiday characters. Okay. I like it.
Got it. Anyway, I think that is our last question. Kind of a, mm-hmm. We had quite the range of emotions going on in the show. We cried. I yelled, I think. Oh, my goodness.
Sounds like a typical AUA. AUA is ask us anything. I just realized.
Yeah. You guys are smart. I think they figured it out. All right. Well, as you heard us mention about the show notes about 400 times, definitely hope that you guys go over there and visit them to find a lot of relatable links to this. We will be answering a few additional things, I think, on stories at some point. And prior to this being released, there are some roundups that have been released. And so definitely just kind of, it'll all be at the landing page of the show notes. Mm-hmm. So that's really what you need to know. We will link show notes. And if you don't know what they are, head over to our website, risenmotherhood.com, click on the big gigantic podcast button, and then you'll see the image for this show right on that page. And you can click there. And show notes are basically just a place. It's a landing page for each individual show for all the links and resources that we mentioned. So that's it. Oh my goodness. All right.
You persevered to the end.
Persevered to the end. Head over to social media to find us, Risen Motherhood on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.